In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
And now, Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. The Fuzztones are a long-running 60s-style garage rock band, active since the early 1980s, and favorites of ours here in the Underground Garage. My guest is their frontman and lead guitar player, Rudy Protrudi. He'll run down the band's history, and we'll also talk about their latest release, Encore, which features our recent coolest song in the world, Barking Up the Wrong Tree. Let's hear some of that now, followed by my interview with Rudy on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
You come slipping around here like I'm some prime choice cut of beef. I see you licking your lips, baby, and shocking your teeth. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, baby, out to bury your bone. But my backyard, babe, is a no-bone zone. Well, I ain't no cold bother, I don't own my own home. Don't ask me to throw your dog a bone. You're barking up the wrong tree.
Mighty Manfred here, and for today's Coolest Conversations, I am speaking with Rudy Protrudi, lead vocalist and guitarist for the long-running 60s-style garage rock band The Fuzztones. They led the 80s garage rock revival, along with bands like the Chesterfield Kings, Liars, and Fleshtones even. Their latest release is Encore, and it's home to this week's coolest song in the world, Barking Up the Wrong Tree. Hey, Rudy, how are you?
Great. How you doing, Manfred?
I'm doing excellent and very happy to be chatting with you, my friend.
Same here.
The Fuzztones, you are currently in Berlin, is that right?
Yeah, that's where I live.
And how long have you been overseas in Berlin now?
Going on 19 years.
Wow, 19 years. Now, you were not a homegrown German, though. I mean, you grew up like in the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania area, maybe?
I grew up in Harrisburg, and then I moved to New York City in 1977. And then I left for Los Angeles in 1987 and formed the L.A. version of the Fuzztones there. That was the actual third version of the Fuzztones.
Well, when you were growing up as a kid, was there any one moment, any epiphany you had that got you rocking your life away?
Absolutely. I had seen the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. Really cliche, but that's how it started. And like every other kid, my mind was blown and I had to go get a guitar and the whole bit. Then I was at my cousin's house. He was basically my age and we both had guitars and we were into music. And his mother comes in the room and he goes, "Hey guys, the Beatles are playing Shea Stadium. You want to go?" And he goes, "No." So I didn't get to see the Beatles. So I was really ticked off. So it was only about a week later that, and I was in New Jersey at the time, that's where I vacationed. And my mom saw that Paul Revere and the Raiders were at the convention hall in Asbury Park. And they were my favorite American band. They were on a show called Where the Action Is 5 days a week. And then they had their own show on Saturdays called Happening 68. But that was a little later. This is back in 66. They were very popular, had loads of hits. And my mom took me to see Paul Revere and the Raiders. And I was like 14 years old, 15, something like that. And I was probably the only boy in the whole entire audience of screaming girls and their moms. And it just appealed to me. You know, I said, I've got to do this. And from that point on, that was my only goal in life, is to get a band and play guitar.
Well, what was your first guitar? What kind of guitar was your first guitar?
Well, my first guitar was an acoustic Dart. It looked exactly like the one on the really famous Howlin' Wolf Rockin' Chair album.
Oh, yeah.
The same exact guitar as that. And then I went on to a Harmony or a Silvertone acoustic.
So you're starting off with acoustic guitars. Was that, I mean, after you saw, were you already playing guitar, then you saw the Beatles, or?
No, I was faking it.
Okay.
I made a cardboard guitar and I'd stand in front of the mirror and play to Chuck Berry records. And then it took about 3 years to convince my parents to get me an electric guitar. And that was a K.
Yeah.
The first one. For the first couple of years, I had really, you know, cheaper guitars, Hagstrom plastic guitar, you know, the red plastic one with a fake speaker built into it and about 20 knobs, you know, to make it look like it was really, you know, an important guitar. And probably about 19 years old, I got my first gold top Les Paul. And then I got serious. Then I started to really learn how to play more than just chords and some super easy leads. And I started to get very, very serious about it. And from that point on, there was really no turning back.
So you mentioned it took a couple of years to get your parents on board to get an electric guitar. Was your family supportive overall of you being a musician?
No. They didn't really discourage it, but they didn't encourage it. You know, they thought it was a passing phase. That's why they got me an acoustic guitar, is because they figured I'd just drop it. But I just kept hounding them and hounding them. And it's funny because, you know, the fuzz tones are really noticed for the Vox Phantom guitars. I mean, as far as I know, we were the band that brought them back.
Yeah.
In the 80s, because nobody was playing them and you couldn't find them anywhere. And the reason why I chose that guitar is because when I first started taking guitar lessons on my acoustic guitar, it was in the back of a music store, and this music store was sponsored by Vox. Oh. So they had a whole wall of Vox Phantoms in every color you can imagine. It's funny now because you can only find them in three colors, I think, you know, black, white, red.
Yeah.
But they had pink, orange, turquoise, all this stuff. And the way they looked, you know, the kind of mod coffin shape.
Yeah.
Just blew me away. I just thought, this is the coolest looking thing I ever saw. So that's what I was really bothering my parents to get.
Yeah.
You know, get me one of these, you know, but no dice. So I didn't get mine until 1979 or 1980. I'd always been looking, but I never found any anywhere. And I found one hanging in this store around Times Square. They had all the music stores there in New York. And the guy wanted $75. And at the time, I thought that was outrageous. So every day I'd come in there with a little more money. I started off with, I think, $50.
Yeah.
He wouldn't take it. Next day, $60. He wouldn't take it. I finally got $75 up, and it had been sold.
Oh.
And I'm really upset.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was still in this band, Teen Appeal, which was my band before the Fuzz Tones. And we had this guy who used to just hang out with us all the time, give us presents, all this stuff. And he would make things for us, like T-shirts and newsletters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I had drawn this T-shirt. I had drawn a Rat Fink playing a Vox Phantom. Uh-huh. And I showed it to him and I said, if you ever see one of these guitars, you let me know because I want to get one. Now, this guy knew nothing about guitars at all. And about 2 weeks later, we were playing the Ritz in New York City, and it was my birthday. And I come backstage, and here he is sitting backstage with a guitar case on the floor. And the guitar case was shaped like a teardrop, so I knew right away what it was. It was a Vox Phantom in mint condition, and his friend had it in the attic and it had never been played.
Wow. Wow. Wait, hey, Wick, what color? Amazing? What color was it?
Black with a white pickguard. Okay. And it's the one I used for years and years and years. I have a newer one now because I beat it so bad. So I finally sold the original. It couldn't be played anymore, but somebody bought it for a lot of money because it was my original.
Well, so you mentioned Tina Peel, and I know, you know, the fuzz tones kind of come out of that. But you got, and kind of interested on, so Tina Peel wasn't playing this kind of 60s garage rock stuff at all, right?
Well, we did do some garage stuff, but we concentrated mostly on 60s pop-oriented punk. We called it bubblegum punk.
Okay.
I was very into bubblegum music. I loved the Monkees, the 1910 Fruit Gum Company. There's another band that was like that, and I forget their name. They did Chewy Chewy, Yummy Yummy, Ohio Express.
Right, Ohio Express.
We were really into those bands, Dave Clark Five, Crying Shames, stuff like that. But we also covered stuff like the Standells. And in fact, it's funny because the Fleshtones were big fans of Tina Peel. Mm-hmm. And whenever they were in the same area as us, we'd have Peter and Keith come up and do sometimes Good Guys Don't Wear White, or a couple other things like that. And we were around for 3 or 4 years. We put out a couple singles. We recorded quite a lot of stuff that never got out.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you exactly when, but about 10 years ago, a guy named Massimo Del Pozzo, who runs Teen Sound Records
right,
in Italy.
Italian guy. Yeah. Right.
He put out a whole Tina Peel album. I collected everything and we put it out. And just this year, I got a deal with Easy Action in London, I think they're in. And they're going to re-release it. I remastered all of it. It mm-hmm. sounds way better than the original one. And that's going to be out in February.
Oh, very cool. So what was the impetus? What became the catalyst to morph from Tina Peel to the Fuzz Tones?
In all honesty, it was living in New York City in Alphabet City.
Yeah.
On the Lower East Side. We were kind of sheltered kids. I mean, compared to most New Yorkers. I mean, we were juvenile delinquents in Harrisburg, but when we got to New York, we realized this is very hardcore.
Yeah.
And we were going out every night at clubs, and we were raising hell and doing all this stuff that, you know, you do in New York City. And pretty soon, Tina Peel was kind of not really representing who we were anymore. And at the same time, I started to long for what I used to do as a teenager. When I was in a band, my first band was in 1966, and we used to do any songs that were on the radio that had 2 or 3 chords.
Yeah.
Because we weren't very good, you know, so we'd do Gloria, Louie Louie, Pushing Too Hard, Psychotic Reaction, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And our manager for Tina Peel was really pushing us to be a new wave band. And we had a major label, Polydor, was courting us. And we were just constantly being told how to be professional and how to do this or that so we could make it big and get a record deal. And my partner at the time was my keyboard player, Debonair. And me and her just really didn't appeal to us. You know, we wanted to do it for fun. And the band just stopped being fun. So it was right around this time that I went to a record fair in New York City, and I just decided to go buy a bunch of albums by one-hit wonders that I had remembered from the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, like The Seeds. I had only ever heard Pushing Too Hard. I never heard anything else by them because that's all they had on the radio. I never heard anything but Gloria by The Shadows of Night. I never heard anything by the 13th Floor Elevators, except You're Gonna Miss Me. So I just bought four or five of these albums just to see, you know, what else did they do? And I just got so into it. And I played this stuff for Deb, and she got super into it. And we just decided to switch over. But Teen Appeal was making a lot of money. So what we did is we decided to take on a new persona and open for Teen Appeal. So what we would do is we would dress differently, and we did a whole set. We called ourselves the Fabulous Fuzz Tones when we first started out because we weren't really serious about it. We were just doing it for fun.
Right.
And we played two times at this club called Hurrah, which was a big uptown rock disco. And the band went over really good. And a lot of people didn't realize it was the same band as Teen Appeal, even though we both played that night.
Right.
We just did a different set. And we enjoyed it so much, we said, you know, let's just do this. Big mistake in a way, because we went from playing $1,000 a night, which was quite a lot of money in 1979.
Absolutely.
To $5 a night. And the most I think we ever got in the first 2 years was $35. And that's not a joke. And we just kept it up because we love the music so much. But I mean, it was really hard. No one wanted to book us. No one wanted to hear this kind of music at all. And
so that's about what year is that? About 1980?
1980 to 1983. In 1983, John Weiss from the Vipers was running a night at Peppermint Lounge. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be called Psychedelic Night, I think. And he booked the Slicky Boys, the Chesterfield Kings, Plan 9, and one other band, I can't remember who. Somehow he forgot about us, and he knew us very well. But maybe it was Vipers. I don't really remember. But after that show, there came a big interest in this kind of music. And suddenly people were more interested in us. And we were playing as a four-piece at the time. And we added a guitar player, which his name was Alon Portnoy. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, the Fuzz Tones just went like a firecracker. It was only maybe 6 months later, we were headlining the Peppermint Lounge, the Ritz, a couple other club, Irving Plaza. And this kept up until 85 when we had our first major tour, which was of Europe. We went to...
And also, let me interrupt for a moment, because 85 is also that's when Lysergic Emanations comes out, the debut album.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. And then mm-hmm. you mentioned then, so that got you overseas to Europe for the first time on that album.
Exactly. And it shot up the charts. It did very, very well. We sold 30,000 albums in the first 3 weeks. And that's the last time they ever told us. We never heard again how much records we were selling. But that's, you know, that's typical. We've had that with almost every label we've ever been on, really. But we did very well. And then we opened for The Damned. And this was in the height of the punk era. So we went through the whole punk thing, you know, of getting gobbed on.
Oh, lovely. How lovely is that?
And I mean, it was every night. Michael J., our bass player, actually went out and bought a raincoat and wore it on stage.
Oh, man, that is so gross. Well, so 85, things really take off. But now that was like this New York lineup. You wound up then moving out to L.A., reforming the band. When did that take place? Like
1987.
And then L.A.
Band broke up in 86, like right after we got back from the tour. The tour was just, it was a very, very hard tour. I mean, it's very hard to imagine all the stuff we went through, and you sure don't have time to hear about it, but just trust me, it was very difficult, and it was a little too much for some people.
Yeah.
And I spent about a year with our bass player, and we got a new drummer, and we tried out, I'd say 100 people in the course of a year, and we just couldn't replace the two guys who left. So I went to LA, check it out. There was a garage scene there and there was a rock scene there. And at the time that I went, New York was really not happening anymore. A lot of the clubs had closed. Mm-hmm. There wasn't much of a rock scene at all. I went out there and there was a small garage scene and there was a very large hair farmer scene, you know, like Guns N' Roses, Poison right. type stuff. So I thought, okay, well, they're playing guitars. They got long hair, you know, so it's rock at least. And it was very big. I mean, they had lots of clubs. They had three newspapers dedicated totally to the rock scene. So me and my drummer drove out from New York to LA. It took about 5 days. We had major breakdowns in the desert, thought we were going to die, all different kinds of stuff. You can read about it in my book, by the way.
Go ahead, plug the book.
I have three books, actually. The first two are my autobiography in part one and part two. It's called The Fuzz Tone. The first one is Raising a Ruckus, and that's up until the LA lineup. And the second one is called The Fuzz Tone, Life at Psychedelic Velocity. They're on FanPro, but if anyone's interested in buying them, they could also write to info@fuzztones.net. My third book is a photo history of the Fuzz Tones' first 40 years. And that's called As Time's Gone, The Lysergic Legacy of the Fuzz Tones.
And so now we're talking about the books. These are, in fact, hardbound books. We're not talking about just...
No, they're hardbound.
Yeah, that's what I thought, right.
Very high quality, actually. Yeah.
So let me ask you about the LA version of the band that recorded In Heat, because that's a significant album, and especially in the garage rock world, because it came out on a major label. All these other... bands, you know, were on independent labels, the bigger independent labels in some instances, but you guys actually put that In Heat album out on RCA, and it was produced right. by Shel Talmy. What was mm-hmm. it like with what was it like working with Shel?
To be perfectly honest, he didn't do much except take our advance. We were already ready to record. We had practiced this stuff. We had played it out. We had arranged it. But actually, we had recorded it. We recorded most of those songs by ourselves and gave them to the label. And the label said, we want to have a big name producer do it. So they gave us a big advance. We had several people interested, big names. But I felt like they didn't have the qualifications to produce us because they weren't 60s or garage oriented. So we read that Shel Talmy was interested in getting back into the business if he found the right band. And we thought, okay, well, he did The Who and it did The Kinks. You know, that's right up our alley. So we got him, and he came down to a couple of rehearsals. He really liked what we were doing, and he made a few suggestions, in my opinion, kind of minor. And we went ahead and did the record, and it came out, and most of our fans at the time didn't like it. Critics didn't like it. Everybody thought it was too polished. I didn't like it. I still don't. I think it's a little too polished. Little Steven says it's the best record we did. So at least there's somebody who liked it. But the funny thing is, about 10 years later, I got an offer to put out the original record. And I did. And that got great reviews. That's called Real Heat.
Real Heat. And who issued that?
Go Down out of Italy.
Okay.
And then later on, it came out on Bang. Yeah, from Spain.
Yeah.
All our records have been out two or three times on different labels, you know, because we've been around so long that every time that that a term reaches its limit, then I just get another deal for it. So at the moment right now, every album that we've ever done is actually available on the market except for Lysergic Emanations and Lysergic Ejaculations and Preaching to the Perverted, which will be out very soon on Bang. And then that's every single thing we've ever done is going to be out all on the market now.
So you guys had
years. We might have 30 albums.
Wow. Well, you guys had a tribute album that came out back in 2006, I think, called Illegitimate Spawn, a double CD, like something like 40 something bands.
That's right.
Covering, doing your material. That's pretty wild. I mean, how influential do you consider yourself to be?
Well, put it like this. We found out while we were on tour that there were bands covering our material. They'd bring their CDs to us, you know, and we'd listen to them in the van while we were traveling.
Yeah.
And after hearing about four bands, I just started wondering how many bands play our stuff. So when we got back home, I just put up on our webpage, I just asked, is there anyone out there who plays our songs? You send it to us. And we got so many songs from all over the world. It was amazing. So that first record, Illegitimate Spawn, is part one. That was 40 bands, and we had way more left over. So I put out volume two. I think that was 50. And I'm talking from everywhere, from Japan to Uruguay. I mean, it blew my mind, really. And some of the people, the contributors, were pretty big. Jane County, Ian Asbury, Madwana, who featured Sammy Yaffa from Hanoi Rocks and the New York Dolls.
Yeah.
Nikki Sudden.
Oh, I remember.
A lot of well-known people. And so that instigated a brand new idea. The LA lineup we reformed in 1996, I believe, for a couple shows. And one of the shows was opening for Question Mark and Mysterians. And after we were done, Question Mark said to our guitarist, you know, I'm going to cover Action Speaks Louder Than Words. That's one of our songs. Mm-hmm. So I was all excited, you know, Question Mark's one of my faves. Well, it never happened, but it spurred me on to think, well, you know, I knew a lot of these guys that influenced me. I knew them personally. So I just started asking around, you know, ask Davey Allen, would you play a song, one of our songs? I asked Sky Saxon. And I started to get these guys to record songs of ours. And once I had two or three, I thought, let's really go for this. So I spent 12 or 13 years getting my inspiration, the guys who inspired me, getting these guys to record our stuff. And I did it in secret. I wanted it to really be like this big bombshell when it came out.
Yeah.
It turned out to be a double album. It's called In Fuzz We Trust. And I got the Electric Prunes, the SF Sorrow lineup of the Pretty Things, Vanilla Fudge, Monks, Sky Saxon. God, there's so many. A Strawberry Alarm Clock. Gone. Man, I can't remember all of them, but it came out and it did very well. And I guess that's out of print, though. That's because it's not a Fuzz Zones record, but it's out of print now. But it was quite an adventure, I'll tell you that. And man, all of them did amazing jobs.
Very cool. Well, let's focus a little here on the on your encore release from this year, because it includes our coolest song in the world this week, Barking Up the Wrong Tree. When I was first listening to the record, I found a description of it as the collection of unreleased recordings. Are all the tracks on there? I think they're like six songs, two more as bonus cuts, eight cuts in all. Are they all previously unreleased, or some of these just more rare recordings?
No, they've all been unreleased up until that point. See, what happened is during the lockdown, that happened right at our 40th anniversary. We had a tour booked and it got canceled. And we basically, like so many musicians out of there, we were put out of work. And I thought, okay, well, at least I'll use this time to write songs and to do some recording. And what I wanted to do for the 40-year anniversary was to do a tribute to New York City, because that's where we started.
Right.
And since it was 40 years, it just felt right to tribute the city and the bands that interested me originally. The whole reason that I moved to New York City is the CBGB's Max's Kansas City scene that was happening.
Yeah.
Richard Hell, Patti Smith, New York Dolls, all this kind of stuff I was very, very into. So what we did is we did a whole album of covers and did them Fuzztone style. And then a year later, we're still in lockdown and I'm going, geez, what else can we do? You know, I didn't really have the band. We have a bass player lives in Holland and a drummer. Organist that we use on tour lives in Italy. So we couldn't really record with them. But I was able to, the drummer lives here. So me and him laid down rhythm tracks, and then me and Lana just dubbed over them. And we chose songs that we had been playing out for the last 5 to 10 years, but have never gotten a chance to record.
Ah.
So that was the whole thing. And that's why it's called Encore. You know, there's not really a concept behind it other than we're winding up the set. You know, it's like, okay, here's songs that you hear us play live, but you never got a chance to hear them on record. So we just collected them.
And Barking Up the Wrong Tree, now that is a song of your own. That's one of your own compositions.
Yeah.
When was it recorded? During lockdown or not?
Yeah, the same year as the lockdown. Yeah. Second year. What was that? 2 years ago, I guess.
Yeah. And when you're talking about the lockdown, you're talking about the lockdown in Berlin, in Germany, which was, I believe, far more strict than what we were having over here, even.
Very strict.
So on the recording, is that a woodblock or is that like a cowbell that's going on in there?
Garage purists will hate this, but yep, it's a cowbell. It's a grand funk railroad.
Well, there's nothing to hate there. It sounds cool.
I loved it. So yeah. That's why it's there, you know.
And so now that's a particular song idea. Was that something that you composed during the lockdown, or was it a song that you had?
No. We had been doing it for at least 5-6 years. Live, but never had a chance to record it.
Yeah. Well, Land of Nod, you do a really cool version of that. Is Steve McKay of the Stooges, is he playing on that version of the song?
Yep, that's Steve McKay. That's the last thing he recorded.
And how did you get him involved?
Knew him. And I don't remember if the fan approached us or we approached him. I don't remember how it happened, but he set it up that that Steve would play with us. And he just came to the studio. And no, actually, we picked him up. We picked him up and took him to the studio. And actually, there's a video of us recording it, but I don't own it. We were going to do a documentary about 7 years ago. And we did all this footage and all these interviews with lots of people, a lot of very well-known people. And then the guy who was doing it, the camera guy, decided to devote his life to smoking pot and not showing up when he was supposed to and stuff. And we just dropped it. So, I don't have any of the footage.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Another cool cover on there is that Pretty Things track, right? Alexander, and you have Wally Waller.
Yeah, now that
is that?
That we did release originally on Horny as Hell, but the version on Horny as Hell was sung by Pretty Things bass player and sometimes lead singer Wally Waller.
Wallace, I thought, okay.
He co-wrote all the songs on F's of Sorrow and Parachute, and he sings quite a few of them on both of those albums. And I always really loved his voice, and he's a good friend of mine, so I had him do the vocals on that one. And since we needed songs on this one, I just did the vocal on it myself, and we put that out. So there's two versions of it.
I see. All right. Well, the only cut on the on Encore that I don't know who did the original. I'm assuming it's a cover. Eyes in the Back of My Head. Who did that originally?
That's a song by Bevis Frond. They're
go ahead.
They're kind of a. I guess they're not that famous. I think they're from London. They're definitely from England, and they have many, many albums. But they're underground, and I'm a big fan of theirs. And the first time I heard their version, which is very different from ours, I just was immediately struck with the hook of the song. And I thought to myself, you know, this sounds like a Sonics type hook. Why not redo this song, reimagining it as a Sonics song?
Yeah.
So that's basically what our arrangement is I stripped it down. I took out a lot of the embellishments on guitar and just made it strictly driving rhythm, you know, for most of the song, and then, you know, go off on the lead when it comes in. But theirs has a lot more to it, you know, and I just stripped it down to the basics.
We mentioned the Sonics, and you cover their version of Santa Claus, and you also do a version on Encore of the Grassroots hit Live for Today. Who's singing lead vocals on that?
Well, that's the Grassroots singing. It's funny you mention that, because one of the labels that we're on and have been on for quite a while is Cleopatra.
Right. And let's be clear, Encore is available through Cleopatra, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, okay.
Same with New York City. And they just asked us if we would like to do a backup track for the original vocals on Let's Live for Today. And I always really liked the song. So we did that, and they liked it. So then they asked if we'd like to record with Ann Margaret, you know, the famous Ann Margaret, Viva Las Vegas. And I've always been a huge fan of hers, so I was really thrilled. So we recorded a fuzz tones version of Born to Be Wild. And that's a single that's being released on Cleopatra. It might already be out. I'm not sure.
Well, as it turns out, I went to a screening of Bye Bye Birdie. And that was, let's see, what month are we in now? We're in, so this was sometime maybe in the spring, in May or June, maybe April even. But it was a screening of Bye Bye Birdie in LA at the Ricardo Montalban Theater. And they had Ann Margaret there to do like a question and answer thing afterwards. And they were, I think Cleopatra had put on the whole event to sort of promote her, this upcoming solo album of hers. And by the way, still looking hot.
I bet.
Very sweet woman. And they were blaring her version of Born to Be Wild through the PA. I mean, you know, they're so definitely cool. Talking about the record and stuff.
So cool.
Yeah. Very, very cool woman.
Well,
yeah.
Well, it's funny because since those two, were so successful, they just offered us to re-record Windy by the Association and a song by the Cramps, which I gather is for a compilation. And we just laid the rhythm tracks down yesterday. It's hard to imagine us playing Windy, but I think you'll be surprised when you hear the result. It's definitely.
And so this is
half Fuzz Tones, half Association.
It's the Fuzz Tones. So you're singing the song, or is this a.
No.
It's a backing track for who?
Yeah, we back the original vocals.
Okay.
Technology has made it possible now to lift the vocals off of a mixed track. So they just sent us the vocals, and then we provide the music to it.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. Now, with the Cramps, that's different. That'll be us entirely playing the song. We chose Can Your Pussy Do the Dog? And the answer is yes.
Yes, of course. That's
of course
yeah.
You can.
So you mentioned the lockdown came in, and being a touring working musician that could put the kibosh on everything. Have you been able to do any shows this year? Do you have any touring plans? Any idea of when you might be able to come back and do anything stateside?
Well, actually, yeah, we played 4 shows in Spain in March. Those were our comeback shows after the lockdown. And then we're going to be playing a club in Athens called the Gagarin. And I'm trying to see, that's October 5th in Greece.
Yeah.
And that's all we have so far. We have some people looking into some stuff, but we're taking it slow, you know, but we do have people looking out for some more shows for us. As far as America, we just haven't been offered anything. We'd love to come back.
That's an expensive deal, right, with the ticket, especially tickets right now.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that's holding bookers back, actually. But who knows? Maybe after Barking Up the Wrong Tree becomes a big hit.
Or maybe... maybe Little Steven will put on another festival, or maybe he'll have a cruise. We can have the Fuzz Tones sailing on the high seas to the Caribbean or off the coast of Mexico or something like that.
I'm up for it.
Yeah. Well, the other song off Encore that we can take a listen to right now is your version of Plastic People, which I think was first done by that 60s band Wildwood. Do you recall when you first heard the track?
Yeah, when I came to Germany originally, I was really surprised because I really considered myself a garage aficionado. I thought I had heard almost everything. And I noticed that the club scene here was heavily into garage, and the DJs would often play stuff that I never heard.
Yeah.
And that was one of the songs that I never heard. Another is Garden of My Mind by the Mickey Finn.
Yeah, which that's is on a killer song. Record. Yeah, killer.
And both those songs just knocked me out, you know. And I said, whoa, who does these? And Lana, who had been going to the clubs here in Berlin forever, said, oh, everybody knows that song. We danced to it and everybody knows it. And, you know, here I am like, I have no clue. And I said, well, we got to record it.
Hey, Rudy, you have to tell us who Lana is.
Lana Loveland, our keyboard player. She's been with the band now for 20 years, I guess. But about 7 years ago, she got knocked up.
How did that happen? Who was responsible for that?
You know who. And so she has to stay home with our little one, who's growing up mighty fast. And so she really only plays Berlin shows at the moment.
Yeah.
And we're hoping that when our daughter gets old enough, we'll take her on the road and Lana will come back to the band.
Cool. And so, with the Plastic People, so when you heard that track, you started playing it around that time?
I couldn't really tell you. It might have been around that time. It might have been a year later.
Or two.
I'm not really sure. I don't know. But probably not too much longer, because whenever I hear something that really knocks me out, I usually get right on it. You know?
Right. Very cool. Well, Rudy, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Well, I thank you. It's an honor to be on the show.
All right, man. Thank you very much as well. You're welcome. And let's give a listen now to that other track off Encore. It's the Fuzz Tones with Plastic People here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Let's go.
That was the Fuzz Tones with some of the track Plastic People off their latest release, Encore, out on Cleopatra Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to their frontman, Rudy Protrudy, for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Ryan Hamilton has got a new single out now on Wicked Cool Records called On the Edge, and it features his label mate, singer-songwriter Jesse Wagner, singing vocals on it. We'll check in with her about the single and find out what else she's been up to. It's Jesse Wagner on your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stevens Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.